top with recruiting trends and headlines, you're in the right place. Welcome to Career Crossroads, the premier talent acquisition community with your host, Chris Hoyt and Jerry Crispin.
In June, I was asked to moderate a panel at the 2018 Recruiting Automation Summit held by Intello that was in San Francisco, California. Now, we assembled a pretty awesome collection of TA leaders that included Ray Tavares, who's the SVP of Talent Acquisition at Bank of America, Frank Spear, whom I've known for a very long time, Global Director of Solution Design at IBM, our own Kristen Despalmas, CXR member and Director of Employment Strategy at DaVita, and Andrew Trout, who's Managing Director of Human Capital Management over at Goldman Sachs. And the topic of our panel was adventures in extreme hiring, and it was a pretty quick 30 minutes on stage. Now, the Intello team was kind enough to allow us to share that that panel, the video of that panel on the website, and then, of course, hear the audio on the podcast for those that couldn't make it to the event in person. Now, if you head out to cxr.works on the website, you'll actually see this headline and a link not only to the deck or the video for this, but to all of the presentations from the entire event. So very nice of Intello to do that for all of our readers. And the description of that panel was that it may not be an Olympic sport yet, but the hiring demands at the world's fastest growing companies highlight the feats of endurance, perseverance, and determination that talent acquisition leaders at these companies demonstrate. Hear how leaders in the most radical hiring circumstances have successfully scaled their teams and technology to hire hundreds or even thousands of people while making it look easy. And these guys certainly made it look easy, so enjoy the panel.
So we can start to bring the second, the next panel up here. That'd be great. Our panelists coming up. My name is Chris Hoyt. I am the co-owner and partner of a company called Career Crossroads. We are a membership-based organization for talent acquisition leaders. And we've got about 115 companies that we pull together to really just talk about what keeps them up at night. So the challenges that they're having in recruiting and talent acquisition, their wins, their losses, things they love, their pains. Really great way to do that, and that's why I get a little bit excited, because we can kind of continue some of that conversation and some of that dialogue with just some fantastic leaders that we've pulled together for this panel. And today, obviously, the panel next up is Adventures in Extreme Hiring. Now, some of you might be wondering what extreme hiring is, yeah? Yes. I know when we first came up with the title and we were looking, even the panelists are like, yeah, what the hell is extreme hiring? It's actually, you'll be doing some sort of rappelling out of a helicopter while you're closing a deal and trying to ink something with the CHRO, so it's pretty easy. So instead of me rambling on about what extreme hiring is we're going to talk about, I'm actually going to ask the panelists, we're going to go down the line, you guys will introduce yourselves, where you're at, and I want to hear what your version of extreme hiring is. That work? All right, we're going to start with you, Ray.
Hey, everybody. My name is Ray Tavares. I work at Bank of America. I lead talent acquisition operations and fulfillment, which is definitely a mouthful. I do like certainly the definition of parachuting. For extreme hiring for us, I think, is really, we hire almost 50,000 people a year in the U.S., and extreme hiring for us is any line of business that has more than 10,000 on the plan for the year. So there's lots of nuances and specific strategies around that 10,000 that really makes it a challenge.
Okay, Frank?
Good afternoon, Frank Spear. A little deja vu. I joined IBM from the Conexa acquisition when John put it up this morning. I'm involved in the talent and engagement group, so I do global practice for them. So I work with a lot of different clients, a lot of different companies throughout the globe. I would define extreme hiring as anything that's outside the normal rhythm of recruiting. And we've seen that in oil and gas go through the spot. You know, they don't, they're not hiring, and then all of a sudden they ramp back up. A new life science drug, and they've got to hire 350 salespeople in 2 months. That would be extreme.
Hi, my name is Kristen Despalmas. I'm with DaVita. If you haven't heard of us, we're a Fortune 200 kidney dialysis company. We hire about 15,000 externals a year, mostly nurses and healthcare professionals. And I had absolutely no idea what extreme hiring is. I hadn't actually heard the term until yesterday.
Hi, I'm Andrew Trout, Managing Director in Human Capital Management at Goldman Sachs, focused primarily on our global engineering and technical talent recruiting, and was previously at Square as a talent lead. Extreme hiring, to me, is less about the numbers. It's more about the challenges and the difficulties that are placed on your teams, and we, you know, we have to react to the business cycle sometimes over the course of a year, over the course of a quarter, and ensuring that you have the right resiliency and the right systems and processes in place to take those hits and absorb them and continue to do what you do well.
Nice, nice. So Frank, we're talking about listening to the market and we're seeing what's going on, but I mean, there is no shortage of volume and numbers amongst you guys in doing the hiring. What do you think is probably the biggest difference when an organization is hiring thousands of headcount, thousands of roles versus dozens?
The number of people that it takes to do a thousand. I think that, to me, it's recruiting. It's about the process. It's about the strategy. It's about what do you have to do to deliver. I think what happens with extreme hiring a lot of times, you would think 50,000 is a lot. For most organizations doing 1,000, that is a lot. But he's got a cadence, a rhythm, a pattern of that. But you've got to hire 1,000 people in 3 months. That's different. And that's why you've got to have a plan, a strategy. You've got to have the right team. You've got to have the right infrastructure, the right attraction strategies, screening strategies. You got to have the right expectations with the business and the hiring managers. And I think those are the biggest things that are the differences.
It's tough. How about you, Kristen?
Volume definitely brings opportunity. So you can have a robust media strategy. We have pre-hire assessments that allow us to filter the funnel. So our recruiters are only seeing the candidates that are most likely to fit and do well. When you have high volume, you have a lot of data that you can leverage. And lastly, we're able to put in custom interview grids and custom processes. So that's a lot harder to do when you're hiring 10 roles. So.
Absolutely. And Ray?
Yeah, I mean, I'd certainly agree with that, those sentiments. I think just thinking for us, I think Frank nailed it. It's really a strong process, and we have to stay ahead of the business. We have to plan for the constant churn and the turnover. Like, we have to be basically 2 months ahead in terms of, just thinking of our consumer space, the retail space. The churn there is fairly high, as you could imagine. So we're like 2 months in advance planning for the hires of July and August, making sure that we're going to hit those classes and, you know, get the financial center reps and the customer service reps, et cetera.
And Andrew, Goldman Sachs, no stranger to volume either.
No stranger to the volume whatsoever. And there's a lot of components to this, but just to think about it, one, think about recruiting as a marketing officer, right? At the top of the funnel, you've got big platforms. How many eyeballs can you get? And I was formerly at Heidrick & Struggles, where you could wrap a bow on every candidate and you could ensure that that candidate was having an amazing experience. The other side of it is at the bottom of the funnel on the data, right? So we probably spend a lot of time in the data, making meaningful insights, and then, you know, ultimately putting some trust in that data.
Nice. So when you're hiring volume like that, there's a really, really great opportunity to just really screw it up, right? You can really, really step all over yourself and mess that up. What's probably one of the biggest ways that you guys have seen in your experience where you could muck it up? And how would people avoid that? And Frank, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think you can muck it up. One of the things that I see as a challenge is that the expectations of the business aren't realistic.
Yeah.
So you have, the business says, what it could be. We just got a new contract, government contract. We want it. We've got to have 350 people to start in 30 days. That may not be realistic.
Piece of cake.
So and if you weren't involved in that, didn't even know it was on the pipeline, didn't even know it was going to happen, that brings it up. So I think the expectations of the business and what they expect are how to muck it up. But I think if you don't have the right team, you don't have the right process, you don't have technology that's going to enable the process, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Ray?
Yeah, I think having a backbone to stand up to your line of business partners and really kind of working out the plan with them, because we see that all the time. I think we're in the news, we're definitely invested in community and improvements there, and we come out with these programs, and no one's really talked to the talent acquisition partner around meeting some of those needs in quick fashion, right? So it's like, okay, how are we going to do this? Let's work together on trying to do that, whether we have to augment some resources to help us with that in the recruiting side, or we can, come to a happy medium, so to speak.
It's got to be so out of the ordinary that business partners don't include talent acquisition when they're doing their people planning. And
everybody's
right?
A part-time
yeah,
TA,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, everybody knows what's best for the organization.
Yes.
Andrew, how about you?
So many mistakes. one, I think,
just pick the one that'll get you fired.
There's two. One is this overemphasis on speed, and that largely comes from a place of pressure. So having the courage to push back on that and being reasonable, and you know, these are investments you're making in the future of your company, and why shouldn't you take a step back and be thoughtful and make sure you're rigorous? The other, which is on us as leaders on the team, we can't depersonalize the wins that our teams have, right? Each successful hire gets a high five when you're only hiring 20 people. When you're hiring thousands, that gets diluted. So finding ways to celebrate and recognize your team is really important, and it's something that you can oversee.
Is there, is there an example of maybe one of those celebrations or one of those tactics you could share with the group?
It's as simple as, you know, sending an email or calling out people on a global call, in terms of, you know, great delivery, great experience. We're getting good feedback from both the business and in the candidate experience surveys that we're sending out. So finding ways to lift the team up and recognize that kind of performance.
Good stuff. And Kristen, how about you at DaVita?
I think we have four kind of our biggest mistakes that we've made in volume. So I would say, number one, not aligning in advance on what good looks like. You can't hire to volume without having alignment and agreement on what that is. Number two, not influencing. We have recently done this, but we waited too long to do it. The hiring manager role and candidate experience and how important that is. We actually did a show called the DaVita Dating Game on stage for our national manager meeting, and we replicated the game, but we had Oversell Oliver, Cynical Clark, and Balance Becca, and they got interviewed, and anyway, it was a really fun way. But what I can tell you is the managers had absolutely no idea about how important candidate experience was because we hadn't told that story. Number three, I would say, well, I thought I had four. Let's see. Starting over each time. I think that can be really bad with volume, is just to start over every time. And I'll stop there.
And there's also this component of when you get to that scale, the business, you know, values their autonomy, right? And we deal a lot with process. And if you overly focus on the process, you lose the soul of that individual business unit or that individual region, right? How do you balance those two? And if you go too far in any one direction of giving complete autonomy, you lose that consistency at a global level. If you only push from at a top-down perspective, one single way of doing it, you will have revolt from the individual businesses, and there'll, you know, be a clear signaling that you lack the understanding of the nuance of Asia or India or a certain region. So that getting that balance is an art.
Yeah, well, I'd say definitely, and I mean, many of you doing hiring around the world, I would say there's probably a balance there too in making sure that some of that stays very consistent, but it allows the flexibility to be customized in each of those markets, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're at a recruiting automation summit. We're talking about, we're hearing AI, artificial intelligence, and ML, the machine learning, the term sort of flung around a little bit. But outside of complete global domination and extermination of the human race and taking your jobs, what are your biggest concerns or worries about artificial intelligence, specifically within recruiting? And Andrew, we just pick up with you.
Sure. So there's a few. One is this idea of black box, right? We've done some research and development and testing, and not understanding why decisions are being made through AI, and we've talked about it on other panels and presenters today. That to me is very scary, and reinforcing what had worked in the past, or using the heuristics that have gotten people hired. Uh-huh. We sort of talk a lot about diversity and debiasing. So that's one of the challenges that AI is facing, opening up that black box and being transparent about the predictive capabilities of talent selection.
Yeah, it's almost like training the machines to continue the bias. And then really it comes back to bite us in the end there, especially with an audit. And we can't explain why we did anything. Just the machines did it for us. Yeah. How about you, Ray?
Certainly that. I think that's primary.
That one now, that's definitely on the list.
Yeah. So my position on AI, it's interesting because I think from a TA perspective, we all want to be successful and we all want to be successful quick. But I think AI is going to be probably the opportunity that kind of shakes our industry a little bit, where we're going to have some failure, but that's okay. But you've got to react quickly. So to Andrew's point, I mean, if you're starting to see and you're monitoring that kind of data and you start to see that skew happen where it's going to be totally biased, then you've got to adjust, new solution, tweaking, whatever it is. And I think that's going to be the interesting piece for us going forward, because I think the companies that don't do that are going to be the ones that are in the news.
So there's not, and not in a good way, not in the news in a good way, but so just flipping autopilot on as soon as the robots arrive is not ideal.
Definitely not.
Okay.
The engines are going to learn, and they're going to learn over time, and some are certainly a lot more mature than others, but there's always a degree of screw-up in there, so.
Yeah, let's hope we don't automate the screw-ups.
Yeah.
That they'll just be faster and more frequent. Kristen, how about you?
I can tell a screw-up story, and then I'll answer your question. So we actually, I think we're a bit ahead of our time at DaVita. We automated our highest volume role about 4 years ago. It was our patient care tech role. And so we had 186,000 people apply to hire 5,000. And at that point, it's just not really sustainable, right? Your recruiters can't get to that many candidates with a high-touch experience. So we put in place a custom pre-hire assessment. We put in place a RJP video. And then we leveraged the OFCCP data management rule. So only 15 people, the top 15 in rank order, were actually given to the recruiter. And everyone else was kind of auto-declined because we had the volume that we could do that. It seemed to go great. Time to fill dropped almost in half right off the bat. My executives were cheering at the possibility. Pilots went well. Retention looked okay. Launched to the whole village, and then the noise started to get really high. What I can say is, at the same time, the business was also offloading a lot more into that individual hiring manager, and it wasn't just recruiting that was also sending work back to the local leader, because we didn't have a recruiter involved in our process. The noise got really high, and in the mistake category, I am sitting in our national meeting and they have skits where they make fun of departments. It's okay to make fun of departments at DaVita. And so, but they had a pizza delivery driver that was sent through the automated system to be hired to be a healthcare tech. And that's how I found out that actually really happened. And so the noise just kept escalating and escalating. And now we actually have a hybrid model where we have automation meets service excellence. We put, you know, we did put humans back in and put a screening at the end of the process. We also had to, we were really lacking in the selling component. So it is an area of failure. It is an area you have to iterate. It is an area you have to constantly play with. And now we're looking to do even more experiments to see what more in that we can streamline. But to directly answer the question, what am I the most fearful of because of that experience? It's just the change management and the messaging that goes with the technology.
No. How about you, Frank?
I work for IBM, so I love artificial intelligence. It's been very good.
That's a very unbiased statement here, Andy.
How many of you saw the Watson or the Dateline piece on Watson? Okay. Was that moving and emotional? And if you had any kind of relative or family member that's had cancer, you saw the pains, the struggles. When I saw that, my wife is, you know, had cancer, so I watched and I go, if Watson can figure that out and help doctors do a better job of making the right diagnosis for people, I'm all in. Everybody agree? But then we go to recruiting, the field I am, and as you know, Watson, we have Watson, and we have Watson recruitment, we have candidate access, et cetera. The fear is that we jumped in like that's going to solve all of our issues and problems, and I think we're still learning. Mm-hmm. So I think Billy Bean said it well, and I can remember years ago, I felt like I was really good in interviewing salespeople and hiring the right people. One of the presidents of a $500 million company today, I headhunted out of a retail department store, and now he's the president of that company. He thanks me every time he sees me, you know, for doing that. So I think I felt like I was really good at it, and somebody looked at me and says, well, what do you think you do well? And I said, well, I got this process, but I'm really good at it. He says, well, you think it's more scientific or artistic? I said, well, I'm really good. I think it's artistic. And he looked at me and says, how do you teach people to be more artistic? And I looked at him and I went, that's an insult. You can't, right? So it has to be more scientific. Yeah. So what my fear are, we're going to jump too fast. What is the return on investment? Let's really analyze and study. But I don't think as talent acquisition, it's still going to have the art, which is what I love Billy Bean said. We still got to convince people to join the company. We still got to make sure they're the right fit. So I think we're going to be here for a long time, and we're going to have great careers and find fulfillment with it.
Jobs will shift a little bit, right? Responsibilities will change. So I'll take us off the rails for just a second to try to make a point here. But one of the things that just drives me knucking futs about at every one of our conferences and things we go to is that year's buzzword bingo, yeah. Right? It was mobile for a really long time. It became big data for a really long time, and now it's what? It's AI and it's the chatbots. And how many? I'm just going to share this. How many people in here have been to Japan? Okay, so you're going to know what I'm saying. The rest of you are going to look at me like I'm crazy. Are the bathrooms and the technology in the bathrooms not incredible? It's a full-blown, no pun intended, hands-free experience in the restrooms. It's amazing, right? That tech in there. I mean, you've got music, background sounds. You're in and out. It's great. It's fantastic. So the reason I bring that up is at last year's HR Technology Conference, I walked that trade show floor, and I swear to you, I saw more artificial intelligence in some of the toilets in Japan than I actually saw on the floor at the trade show that were touting AI and ML, and it could do all of this. So when you guys, and I spin this back to you after being mildly inappropriate, when you guys are thinking about technology and tools and AI and ML and what you're supposed to be watching, how on earth do you take a look at this technology? How do you evaluate it when you've got all these things to consider it and sort of decipher? And Ray, you're going to be the victim because you're closest to me. I'm going to pick you first. How do you evaluate the tools?
So I guess for us, it's actually easy because we're never first at anything. So we'll take it from you guys and we'll get the feedback and we'll try to understand
well played, Ray.
The failure. Yeah. But we're looking at tools all the time. Constant evaluation, just because we haven't done enough of that in the past, and it's something we feel passionate about, and we've had a lot of change over the years, last few years. But yeah, I mean, I think AI, again, is there's so much out there. We're very deliberate. We definitely look at the product a couple times before really kind of stepping into demo mode and broader exposure around our teams and our execs, et cetera.
Great. And Kristen, I know I am a fan of how you and your teams come at problems sideways, yeah. And from a design thinking standpoint. I mean, how do you look at technology, and how do you guys look at vendors and sort of just break through the bullshit?
Yeah. So we really listen to our peer network of other TA leaders out there. What's weighing, what's actually been piloted, what's working, what's not. But we are definitely a fan of experiment, pilot, try something. There are times you don't want to be the first one out of the gate. I would say like an ATS is an example of that. And there are times it's great to be one of the first people out of the gate where the development team is very motivated to meet your needs, so you'll then tell their story. So it just depends, is the honest answer. But I am a big fan of pilots. I'm a big fan of experimentation, and I'm a big fan of setting expectations with my boss that I'm probably going to fail more than I'm going to get it right, but that's how we're going to learn.
Okay.
Agree with all that. And I like the shiny new objects, right? This sort of satisfies the intellectual curiosity. You're on the edge. You know what's new. But recognizing that, have created a discipline and have like a five-dimensional model to evaluate tools, but I'll focus on the one that I think matters. Again, from a people perspective, one, what's the cost of adoption? Not dollars, right? We can Right. manage our budgets to do a lot and be flexible, but what kind of mind share is it going to take to get people to adopt and actually use this tool? Because in my experience, the reason they fail isn't directly due to the technology. It's directly due to the willingness to invest the time to get to know how to use the tool and prioritize it, mm-hmm. right? If you're a recruiter, you're busy, you're overworked, and if something doesn't work in the first 30 seconds, you're over it.
it's out.
You're done. And then the other piece is we are certainly looking to leverage technology to, address resourcing and cost, but how do these tools make us more trusted advisors, right? How does this free us up to spend more time with the people who matter so we can be better at the art and also, you know, a little bit better at the science side?
So a check and balance for you is, as you're looking at the technology, does this make me a better business partner or a better advisor internally? If not, ain't nobody got time for that. Okay, all right. Frank?
Yeah, I would agree with what Andrew's saying. I think that we look at it from the viewpoint of what's the return on investment. What are we trying to accomplish by buying the technology? It seems like most people that I work with are clients, they want to know what the case studies are. So show me where you've implemented this. Show me where it's worked. And unfortunately, they don't trust salespeople. They want to maybe talk to a client. They want to talk to somebody else who's used it. And so there's a validation. But I think I've seen so many clients and ones we work with that buy a piece of technology, they went through all the demos, and then they turned over to the recruiting team, and I go back later and said, how's it working for you? And they're not using it at all. So then that hurts the next investment as well.
Uh-huh.
Because you spent $250,000, whatever it is, for that technology. Now you're going to go ask for another $250,000? It's not going to happen. So I think that's where you really have to be, I wouldn't say cautious, but you need to be, make sure you have the good return on investment, know what you're going to use technology for.
Sure.
I'd add one more really
decision
criteria. I was like, oh, I can't believe I didn't say this. But you have to be really mindful of where the technology fits in your tech stack, because if it's just another system that recruiters have to go to, they're not going to go. And if it's another system hiring managers have to go to, guess what? They don't go. And so there's so much technology out there, but at the end of the day, you could end up with like a Christmas tree with a ton of branches. And, you know, that is so important to me of how is it integrated. I already know they're in the ATS, so it's got to just seamlessly integrate in and out. So that is one of our biggest decision-making criteria.
Absolutely. So Andrew, I'm gonna pick you for the next question, because we want to ask, you know, what tasks within talent acquisition do you automate versus maintain a bit of a human touch for? And you and I talked about this briefly on the telephone a few weeks ago, and I'm just a big fan of. And you may want to share a little bit of the background, the work that Goldman Sachs did from an automation and recruiting standpoint with video. And you guys were way ahead, in my humble but correct opinion, of everybody else in the space. Can you share a little bit of that and then tell us where you're at today from an automation human touch standpoint?
Sure. I mean, I think the two easy places to go are the video interviews and scheduling, right? I think
we
should automate scheduling, right? Even though it impacts the candidate experience, it should be something that, you know, is automated. The video interviewing is something that we deployed in our campus recruiting, and we got feedback from the team that, one, it was costly in terms of hours. We were asking our employees to spend tens of thousands of hours interviewing, and it wasn't that they weren't willing to make that investment, but they wanted more flexibility. And so they can now go home and sit on their couch and look at recorded video interviews via HireVue. It's gotten great feedback. It's also helped us put much more structure behind our interviews. So we validated the questions. We've applied methodology and science to validating those questions. So it's driven better outcomes in terms of the hires. And we've looked at we're very data hungry, and every decision is made through it. And we've looked at the performance of the hires that we've done through that video interviewing, and there is substantially higher performance coming as an outcome on the folks that we've hired through that process. So it's been a good win and a great example of a version of automation.
Great. And you continue forward with that automation.
Yes.
Yeah. Good stuff. Ray?
Well, Andrew basically just took my answer. But as you prefaced, Goldman was out of the box with that one.
Yep.
So we had some video interviewing discussions as well. So we've got campus out, and we've got part of our consumer audience also out the door this year. So next year we're expecting about 30,000 hires to come through video interviewing.
Will it be asynchronous, or will it be they're pre-recorded and going through it, or will it be live video interviewing for you guys?
Well, it's a good question. Mainly pre-recorded, but we will have some two-way interviewing capabilities coming out this year. We just don't have a good number on it. I guess in addition to that, we've explored some bot usage as well, just simple bots of, you know, marrying up spreadsheets instead of recruiters or recruiting coordinators doing that. We're starting to see some dividends there and would expect, you know, significant investment in that in 2019.
Good stuff. Wow. Frank?
I think the sourcing should be automated. There's my throw to PJ on that one. I really believe that you need to have human people that are driving some of the strategic decisions of how we're going to find the candidates, but I really believe sourcing should be letting technology help that. So I'm a big fan of the Intello product on that. The other thing is with watching candidate assist, we saw a 60% conversion of interested to applicant, people applying, with being able to go to a website and have Watson help them with their career path and chatbots. So to me, with a 60% conversion, you know how many people IBM has looking at the website, that's significant. So that's another value add. The more we can automate, I like robots. I think robots, especially in the onboarding process, if you've got people that are pushing paper, that should be, if a robot can do it faster, once again, it's not value add. Let's get their team focused on the important things. I like the interview scheduling. I'm still struggling with that a little bit. And I've had to talk to a couple of people. I don't see it in multi-languages. I think this whole GDPR thing is interesting, how that's going to play out. So I believe in it. I don't know about you, but if I go to the doctor or dentist, I usually schedule it with a person, but then they remind me like crazy. Text, voicemails, you know, emails. And I like that. And I think we have that kind of approach with technology. It really helps as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the chatbots. There's an organization that's a member of Career Crossroads, and I won't name whom they are, but they had a really hard time finding a very particular role to get filled, and they just couldn't generate enough interest in candidates, and they dropped a chatbot on those pages relevant. And what was happening is the very basic implementation of a chatbot was able to ask questions to the folks that were otherwise bouncing off of those pages. And by, I think they had slammed it in at around 8 a.m., and by lunchtime, the recruiters were saying, you got to turn this shit off because it's killing us. We're getting flooded. They had 1,100-some-odd viable candidates that had come in just that morning because of the very simple task of being able to answer a few super basic questions that otherwise, you know, the candidates just left looking for. So I think it's an easy win.
I think the future, and we talked about this with other technologies, but I think the pre-employment screen process is archaic. I don't know if everybody agrees with that. I mean, everybody does it, but you've got to go through this different technology to get this, you know, to get the credit. You got to go to the MVR. I got to run police, you know, all that kind of information. That should be automated. And somehow, you know, if you check the credentials, I mean, we got people doing that today, and it's just so lengthy and so time consuming, and it delays the offers. So I just think somehow we've got to figure out, how do we automate that, and how do we make that fast? And everybody agree as organizations, we're going to use this one platform to do it with, whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, you guys know I begged for a blockchain segment, so we could talk blockchain, but I was shut the hell down. Kristen, what about you?
I'll start with where I think we need human touch, and that's influencing hiring managers on how to partner with recruiting, what their role is, what our role is. I don't see that getting automated because you have to consult, you have to educate, you have to change minds. I also, kind of my stance on this one, if you're a post and pray recruiter, we can definitely automate that role. If you build long-term pipelines, you keep in touch, and you have referrals generating and calling alumni, and you have people that you're building time and relationship into before there's even an open need, we won't be able to automate that. So that's where we are.
So if you're, what I'm hearing you say is, if you are still a post and pray recruiter, you better post your resume and pray that somebody still wants to hire you. Is that what you're getting at?
No comment.
You didn't say that. I said that. It's fine.
You said that.
So one of the last questions for you guys is recruiting automation, working it into you know, your current teams, how it augments your workflow, and just really how does it transform the art side of recruiting. And Frank, I think you were alluding to this a little bit too. We'll start with you, so you can sort of echo that sentiment a little bit. But how are we shifting more science from art?
I just love this industry. And I don't know, for me, I was invited out here to speak, but I really came as a student more than anything else. I've been in the industry a long time. And to me, it's still one of the greatest industries where you take somebody where they are and you get them a 25,000, 30,000, 20% raise on where they are with a better career opportunity. Isn't that wonderful? They would never have known about that opportunity if you hadn't have done it. So to me, the art of it is still going to be having recruiters that are able to get on the phone and select and screen for the company and really do good at selling the organization. The reason I was good at interviewing salespeople was because I failed so much at it. But I learned from my failures. The first three people I hired with the company I was with, they all quit. And I said, well, I can't. And I worked with an organization that was real selective in people, and I thought, well, I got to change. So to me, I had to learn the art of how to even make sure this is the right candidate. And all the tools can help us, but how do I sell them to want to work for this organization and sell them from the viewpoint it's good for them and it's good for us, not just one way or the other?
Well, Frank, you and I have known each other for a very long time, so I'm really glad you stayed at it. I'm really glad you stuck to it. Andrew, how about you?
Well, I think there's this element of engagement, right? If you think about the candidate journey, there's key moments along the way, and I think technology for us is starting to help us with that. And that's part of the automation. It's part of what had been an art form in the past. We know when to call who, for what, and how to. Like we've looked at that from an automation challenge perspective, and then really working on the sell and the close on the recruiter side, and that art will forever be in existence, in my opinion.
Yeah, well said, Ray.
I liked what Andrew was saying. I mean, probably had the term moments that matter, right? I think for candidates, that's every day. For us, you know, we're in one of three households in America. So we're telling those candidates no, and they're our customers. So we absolutely take that serious. So I'm excited about the work that we're doing for the future, not just the video interviewing and the improvements that we're talking about, but just really putting recruiters in a better sense, right? I think you guys touched upon it earlier. I mean, recruiters are busy, especially in this space. They're competing for the same talent. We've got to help them out, right? We've got to help improve their process. It was just, everybody was looking for that silver bullet, right? Like, so let me just go put up the big ATS and invest heavy, and let's see where the dust, you know, falls. And that, not an epic fail by any means, but definitely the wrong approach. So I think we've graduated from that. So I think it's just a more integrated environment going forward, and hopefully we're going to turn that around for recruiters.
Good stuff. And Kristen, why don't you take us out with your answer?
Sure. So for where DaVita's going to play with automation, we're actually experimenting. We have four areas right now we want to experiment with, and what we decided is to start with the problems we wanted to solve that we thought automation could actually do, and they were areas that we didn't think needed high human touch. And so we started with our problems we want to solve, and we're now vetting all the vendors out there to figure out who can meet the most of those problems and challenges. And then I'll set up the pilots to be an isolation in different areas so we can actually measure what gets us the biggest lift. So that's how we're approaching, and hope to have them live by the end of this year.
Great. There's a tremendous opportunity scene to take some of that automation and just let recruiters get back to really recruiting and get some of the mundane and tedious stuff off their plates, because they don't want to do that shit anyway. Yeah. Right? Yeah. All right, let's give these guys a hand. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Career Crossroads. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And for more great content and to stay up to date, visit CareerXroads.com, Facebook.com, and Twitter.com/CareerXroads. We'll catch you next time.